Welcome to Babbling Books, a podcast about books and the authors behind them. I'm your host, Lily. You can follow me on Twitter at BabblingLily, and please follow or subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to it, so you get updates whenever I put out new episodes, which is hopefully every other Monday. Today's interview was actually hosted by my very own school library through our book fair. So that's a fantastic event my librarian puts so much work into. She handpicks every single book and orders them through this local bookstore called The Golden Notebook in Woodstock, New York. Thank you, Robin. So I'm super excited to announce I'll be talking with Lynn Cherry today, who wrote slash illustrated around 30 successful children's books, mostly focusing on environmental activism and issues like the deforestation crisis. She also now produces short films through Young Voices for the Planet. So without further ado, Lynn Cherry. So I was wondering, what inspired you to write about environmental issues and start writing picture books and drawing for children about these issues?
At first, the books were not about environmental issues per se. I started out as an illustrator. So the first 10 books that were published were books that I illustrated, not wrote. And those were about kids and nature, mostly. And so it was this nature connection, my love of nature, my heartbreak when the nature that I was so tied to as a kid, my forest was destroyed before my eyes. So it was loving nature, having nature destroyed, and then feeling like I wanted to do something to save the world, save the natural world.
Awesome. That's awesome. So why did you choose to write for children specifically?
I was writing children's books when I was 8 years old. So the first book that I wrote was about just being in the woods. That book I brought to my publisher when I was in my 20s, and they published it. I had to redo the illustrations. They told me I had improved a little bit since I was 8. And then I redid it, and that was my first book that I published, that I wrote. And so it's really just my concern about the natural world.
Have you ever thought about writing for teens or adults, or do you prefer writing for children because of their age or because of the effect that they can have on adults?
Okay, so I illustrated 10 books for children. I was an illustrator, and so, you know, you can't illustrate middle school books, so I illustrated children's books. And then the next 20 books I wrote as well as illustrated, and those were children's books. And then I wrote a book for middle school kids that was illustrated with photographs by my friend Gary Brosh and myself. And then, and now I write for adults. I've written a couple textbooks for teachers. I've written chapters in like a National Geographic book called Written in Water about the land I live on. And so I actually write for all different ages, every age imaginable. I write blogs. I wrote this New York Times op-ed on something called motivated avoidance, why people are motivated to avoid hearing about troubling environmental topics because they scare them. They make them feel awful. So they're motivated to avoid them, and why it's so important to teach when you're talking to especially young people, well, everybody really, is to talk about the success stories and the solutions and hope before you get into the doom and gloom of the issues that we're facing.
How did you get to produce your film series, which is called Young Voices for the Planet? What was that process, and what inspired you to film instead of write?
I noticed that all these kids around me didn't have their faces in books. They had their faces on their iPhones or these digital devices. And I thought, if I'm going to get to these young people, I'm going to have to get to them on the media that they are using. So I decided to do these short films.
What was your process in starting to produce and getting these films out here?
After I did the book, How We Know What We Know About Our Changing Climate, Scientists and Kids Explore Global Warming, I thought, this is talking about all the science of climate change, but it wasn't motivating people to actually do something about climate change. In fact, it may have actually been pushing them away because of this motivated avoidance I just discussed. So I thought, I have to tell people the success stories. So then I started hearing about these stories about this kid, Alec Lors, who had put up these sea level awareness posts on Coastal Ventura, and he'd written a Declaration of Independence from Fossil Fuel and presented it at Congress. And then other kids who had greened their school, gotten rid of food waste, gotten rid of styrofoam, other kids who had gotten the first plastic bag ban in their state of California. This group was called Team Marine, and then they went on to get a statewide ban on plastic bags. And then I started hearing the stories of kids who were actually changing laws. So these kids, the plastic bag kids, they actually went and testified at their city council, and they got a law banning plastic bags. And then these kids in Lexington, Massachusetts, there was a law prohibiting solar panels on town buildings. And they, at 9 years old, they testified at their town meeting. They got a standing ovation. They overturned this law, and the town put solar panels on every town building. So I started thinking, wow, kids have so much more power when they're actually changing people's minds and changing laws and changing culture. And kids can do that. This is really big. And so that's what I've been focusing on, is the young people going and testifying at town meeting, getting involved in their local issues. And I'm asking kids, turn off the TV in the evening. Just don't watch TV at all. Get your family to come with you to the Conservation Commission meeting, where they're going to talk about, are they going to save this forest or are they going to cut it down? If you're not there, the people who want to cut it down are going to be there. But if you're there, even one person can stop these things from happening, can really preserve the natural world in your community.
Thank you. So I was wondering, what were some obstacles you came across, either with publishing or editing or creatively, that you came across in your career, with writing or with producing this series of films?
I was so fortunate with my children's book career in that I got out of school, brought my portfolio to New York, immediately got work illustrating children's books, just had a children's book every year for 30 years. After 10 illustrating, then started only illustrating what I was writing, and these were stories that were really important to me about saving the rainforest or cleaning up rivers, like in A River Ran Wild, or all these different children's books. One of my favorites is How Groundhog's Garden Grew, about this groundhog who learns that it's better not to eat other people's vegetables, but grow your own. So I didn't have many obstacles with that. I was really fortunate. But then with the films, I have to say that it has been a real hard slog. That with children's books, you just go in, you get a contract, they give you a check, you have a year, and you do the book. Of course, you have to have incredible perseverance, because you can't go out and play. You have to just stay in and work a lot when you don't want to be working. But at the end, you've got this beautiful book that you can hold in your hand and people can read, and millions of people can read it, and changes, you know, that can change lives. With the films, I had to raise the funds. So it's been fundraising. And although I've been very fortunate raising the funds to make these films, it's not an easy thing. It's very time consuming. Also, I need help. I'm not an administrator type person. And with making the films, it's also a nonprofit. Young Voices for the Planet is a nonprofit. So we have partnerships with other institutions, universities, nonprofits that use the films. So there's a lot of paperwork involved with this. So that's been really hard, because basically it goes against my nature, just being creative. But I feel so grateful that I've just been able to spend the last 10 years making these films about such important topics of kids, you know, young people, and this is like age from 9 to 17, these young people who are really changing minds, changing laws, and changing the world. They are We're seeing a lot of this now where the young people are rising up and speaking out, like Greta Thunberg from Sweden and Jamie Margolin, who started Zero Hour. And there's the Sunrise Movement. There's Kids Versus Global Warming. Shatescat Martinez from Earth Guardians, he sings, but he also goes out and speaks all around the world. I mean, these are amazing young people. The Parkland kids probably got the most publicity about gun control. And it's like everyone's yelling, the emperor has no clothes. You know, here's what the adult world has been telling us, but the kids are yelling, the emperor has no clothes, that basically this capitalist model does not work. You know, that we can't just run roughshod all over these other peoples around the world. My movie, Words Have Power, is about this girl, Jason, in Bridgeport, and environmental racism. She talks about her asthma, and the power plant is built like right next to her house. I've been working in Pittsburgh. I have a film series funded by the Heinz Endowments that's a civic engagement and democracy workshop that we're putting on around Pittsburgh. And we have these young people who are fighting fracking in their communities. Kids who lived in a beautiful area like what you've got here at this school with the mountains and beautiful, and they put a fracking well right next to the school. And now it's spewing all these toxins. And so these kids actually could use your help. You know, I'm thinking it's going to take not just those kids in that community, but it's going to take the global community of kids to basically write letters, do interviews, and say it is wrong to put a fracking well and basically contaminate all these children. So I'm hoping that we'll get some help with that.
We have about like 1 minute, so if you can answer a question very, very quickly, we have time for one more question.
Sure.
How do you think environmental concerns relate to other human rights issues today? Like you mentioned environmental racism in like very short terms. What does that mean? What is environmental racism? Mm-hmm.
That's a great question. If you watch the movie Words Have Power, in that movie, Jason says they wouldn't put a coal fire power plant right next door to a house in Westport, Connecticut, you know, this beautiful rich area. So it is environmental racism. And it does target poor people, and especially people of color. And when you see that, you realize that is just not right. But if we turn to a renewable energy economy, like the Green New Deal, if we get off of fossil fuel, you're not going to contaminate those neighborhoods. If you have solar panels, if you have wind, you know, that we can get to a renewable energy economy. So we're not having to make these decisions. Well, whose backyard is these polluting industries going to be in? So we can do this and have win-win scenarios.
Thank you, Lynn Cherry. Stay tuned for more interviews from the book fair. Lynn Cherry has a wonderful website, lynncherry.com, and that's spelled L-Y-N-N-E, and then cherry like the fruit. Is it a fruit? Is it a berry? And this website features her movies through Young Voices for the Planet, her books, and so much more. Lynn is also on Facebook. Subscribe or follow this podcast wherever you listen to it to stay up to date on the newest episodes. And these come out every other Monday. Oh, and say hello on Twitter at Babbling Lily. Any questions you want to ask future authors? Do you want to be interviewed? Tag me or comment on a post of mine. Thanks for listening to Babbling Books. I'm glad you joined me.